This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Back to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com, live here inside the web studio. Ira's in the MDN studios. And of course, as we do 9 o'clock hour every single Thursday, the MGO blog roundtable with the MGO blog crew. Starting off first with the guy who started it all over at MGOblog.com, Brian Cook. BC, good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm glad that we get to talk about a Wisconsin basketball game where officiating is irrelevant.
Yes.
Yes.
Not according to RCMB.
Because they cut the crap out of them. I mean, officials could affect that game if they – I guess they could have affected it if they tried, but still.
I thought they did a great job. I really appreciated the officiating in this game.
Yeah.
In fact, I would want to say the officiating has been, except for Larry Sirota in the Penn State game, the officiating this year has been as good as I've ever seen in the Big Ten, and that's not just in the Michigan games. It's in other games I've watched.
Yeah, it was so good that Greg Gard complained about not getting fouls called on Wisconsin. He said, we didn't get enough fouls in this game. We should have. That told him that his team wasn't aggressive enough, that they didn't get called for more fouls, which is crazy.
No, it isn't a crazy idea because, in fact, you have to read how the game is being officiated, and the officials were letting them play a bit, and so you have to take advantage of that when that's what it looks like is going to happen. I mean, well, I don't know what was going on head coach with our boy Lewis Garrison in that game, because I don't think he blew the whistle once, it was a interestingly officiated game, but it worked out, and truly, it was a beautiful game to watch, and not really just from Michigan's point of view. I actually thought Wisconsin did not play all that terribly. They didn't shoot it well, but they didn't play a dreadful game. And I watched later. I don't know if anyone looked at Kentucky and Alabama after the Michigan game. That game was dreadful.
Yeah.
I mean that Kentucky doesn't even play anything I recognize as basketball. And Alabama wasn't a hell of a lot better. I mean, it really was the juxtaposition of Michigan and Wisconsin and then Alabama and Kentucky was startling in terms of the quality of the play.
That voice you hear, by the way, folks, is Craig Ross. He is not Faux Craig on Twitter. But we'll get him on Twitter at some point, I imagine.
But whoever Faux Craig is slandering me or libeling me on Twitter, thank you.
And then of course, Seth Fisher. Seth, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing just fine.
So, Brian, you were saying something about Greg Gard complaining about not having fouls called.
What is one thing when, you know, Izzo's like, we didn't have enough fouls called on us because we weren't aggressive enough. When Wisconsin's head coach is saying that, that's something else, because their program is built around not fouling on defense and making people shoot over you. So, which is what Michigan's philosophy is too. So in one sense, Michigan kind of out Wisconsin in this game. And the thing that kind of leapt out to me is there's this YouTube channel that puts up highlight videos, and like all highlight videos, they're all buckets, right? Like you don't get a lot of misses. They included the last 49 seconds of the half, which was one Michigan defensive stand after another that ends with the bench coming onto the court because the buzzer sounds and Wisconsin wasn't even able to get up a shot. And then like the thing that really jumped out to me is Shondi Brown's on Trice.
Yeah.
On one of these possessions. And there's 10 seconds on the clock. And Trice just kind of sizes it up the situation and throws the ball to Tyler Wall. It's like, there's 10 seconds on the shot clock and their tough shot guy is just like, no, not today.
Go ahead, sir.
Like, that was the game in a nutshell, that like Trice could not drive on this team. And that's Wisconsin's best way of breaking down your defense, and everything. Everyone else is just kind of, you know, in their roles. Like, no one else on that team is a real athlete. So, you know, that and Micah Potter shooting threes, and he was a little off. So, I mean, once that was off, they were just trying to shoot over Michigan's defense the whole rest of the game. They didn't even go in the lane, I think, in the second half.
Well, they tried to post them up, too, and I think they felt like they could probably post up all their guys. I mean, they certainly thought they could post Brad Davison up on Mike Smith.
They were so bizarre.
They thought that Reavers would be able to take advantage of Isaiah Livers. That didn't work. And then you mentioned just the way that Michigan is able to contest shots. And that wasn't, this wasn't unique to this game. I mean, they have done that all season, certainly for the last month and a half of really contesting shots on the perimeter. This is the best 3-point shooting team in the Big Ten coming into the game. 41%, 41.4%, I think it was, from three.
Yeah, that's right.
21% from three at the break, with like a hand in the face of every shot. And the thing that was startling to me is that when they got open looks, they were like shocked that they were open and were thrown off by that, because Michigan was just swarming. They were everywhere defensively. And that's the thing that I think is going to sustain this team. I mean, they're going to have off shooting nights, but that defense, I don't think is going anywhere.
Well, I'm sorry, Brian, go ahead.
I just wanted to conclude my shout out to Mike Smith. You mentioned they post up Davison on Smith very early. And that was the thing that I was looking at as a potential problem area. And he bodies the guy up to the point where I think he's shooting from outside the paint. He has to shoot through Smith's body, literally. And I don't even know if Davison drew rim on that shot. Really set a tone. And this is a guy who everybody thought was going to be the defensive liability early in the season. And, you know, he's short. Yeah. And he's always going to be short. But given that, he's doing the absolute best he can.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, the improvement on this team. Early in the season, we were running on KenPom probably in the 40s on defense. Right now, we've moved all the way up to number 10. I think we're number one in Big Ten games on defense. And a lot of it has to do with the improvement of Mike Smith, because he really has become far from a liability on defense. He's actually an asset on defense right now, and I'm stunned by that, and I'm stunned by that improvement. One thing, and you can't underestimate Wisconsin. That's a really good team. Greg Gard is a good coach. He's, you know, and he knows what he's doing, and that team knows what it's doing. And so for Michigan to come out, Michigan was ahead by 40 in that game. They had a 43-6 run, which is just, you know, like otherworldly. And to do that on a team of that quality is truly quite remarkable. And it's gone on now for the last 5 or 6 games. Michigan has had, until they pulled the plug, leads of, I think, 13, 19, 27, 37, and 40.
Michigan has been blowing these teams out so bad that if you go on their KenPom page right now, their third most used lineup is the KenPom guy. It's the you know, Jaron Falls.
I saw that you guys posted that. That was really fascinating. Not something I would have thought about. But, yes, so, you know, it somehow, you know, in the back of my head, I keep feeling like there's something wrong here because it's almost too good to be true.
Yeah,
you've had the same thought. Yeah. I mean, it's like this just can't keep going on because nobody can play like this.
Well, and I think you have a point offensively, but defensively, I just think they're going to be consistent with that because there is absolute buy-in to taking that, putting as much into that end of the floor as they do offense. And it's every player. I mean, it's not like it's just Franz or it's just Isaiah. You guys talk about Shondi Brown coming off the bench and is a huge defensive asset, but the weak link, I mean, you know, whether it's not getting posted up or fighting through screens, I mean, Mike Smith is, like you said, Brian, the best he can do with what he has, but you see the energy and effort every single time down the floor, and that is a thing, and that they can do it without fouling. I mean, maybe that's the variable, and maybe they're going to get called for some fouls in some of these games, but the effort, the attention to detail as far as the scout is concerned. They seem to always know where shooters are. They seem to always know where the guy's strong hand is. Just the detail that they have on that end, I think, is going to be a constant. I mean, if anything, I know I was talking to Tim McCormick about this. He said, I just worry about them. Maybe, you know, energy or getting tired at some point becomes an issue. But short of that, yeah, they're going to have some bad shooting nights. I just don't think you're going to have a night where you're like, man, Michigan just, they weren't dialed in defensively. I just don't see that with this team right now.
Their schedule's been very spaced out, and this was going to be one of the first quick turnaround games because they had a game scheduled for Sunday against Penn State. They got canceled. So I think Michigan had extra time to prepare for Wisconsin and really and rest their bodies too, and that's been kind of true this whole season. They only had like a couple games in December. So I am a little worried about, you know, I don't want to say the effort, but, you know, they're just going to get tired. You're going to have to use, yeah. You have to go deeper into your bench. You're going to have to, you know, you're not going to be able to get the kind of play. Like, Livers was just on fire, right? And he came out, and you could feel the energy coming off of him. And that's kind of a thing that maybe wasn't there as much in the beginning of the season. I don't want to knock his defense, but he was not as active. And when Livers is playing like that, man, it's just, you're
dead. In the Minnesota game, I was the one thing that frustrated me slightly was I felt that Isaiah tried to force the ball between defenders a couple times. And I mean, it wasn't an epidemic, but he is a great interview. And, I mean, he's very charismatic, very smart, you know, and this week he had this quote in his press conference. It was, why force it? Why ever force the ball? Why bring negativity into a positive environment? And he was trying to stress that, look, we really have a positive environment on this team. And when you start forcing it and forcing bad plays, it tends to mitigate that sort of synergy and positive energy that the team has. And this week against, I don't think there was a single, maybe one later in the game, a single bad shot or a single forced play.
Isaiah Livers back down where it's like, there's no chance this isn't going up. Like that's something that happens about once a game, but usually they're up by 30 by that point. So who cares? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess if I had a concern about this team, it's, you know, Mike Smith is the guy that I think is the toughest to replace in the lineup offensively. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's the toughest guy to get from someone else what he provides. He has, I think, really gained comfort with the scheme. I think he really understands the players on the floor and what their strengths are, where they like the ball. I think his two-man game chemistry with Hunter Dickinson is really, really good, but it was no coincidence to me. I think it was toward the end of the first half against Minnesota where they went on that little run. It was when Mike Smith picked up his second foul, and they, you know, they have a little bit of momentum there. And I think it had everything to do with Mike Smith not being out there. So to me, you know, I just don't think that there's no backup for him. There's like a backup for everyone else. There's no real backup for Mike Smith and what he provides.
Are you Connor Dickinson is fairly indispensable.
Yeah, I'm with Brian on that one.
Look at the last game, and Hunter Dickinson had 2 points in the first half, and they rolled. They went to. I'm not saying that you can do that every single night. That you aren't going to miss. Honey, he can't score 2 points in the first half every single night. But against the best team that they had seen so far, Wisconsin said, we're going to take that guy away, and Michigan beat him up in other ways. And not only that, when Austin Davis comes in the game, he goes right up and over and gets with a post touch and gets a score. So I'm not saying that Hunter Dickinson, you could just toss him out and no problem. But I do believe that it's harder to compensate for Mike Smith being out of the lineup than it will be for this team moving forward. You at least got some alternatives. You can try Austin Davis. You can try Brandon.
Johns.
You got some other scoring threats. But who's going to be the distributor for this team if Mike Smith isn't on the floor against a good team? I just That does concern me. If it happens, they may never have that bridge to cross, but if they do, that would be something that concerns me.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that completely. I mean, because Juwan thinks that the best defender on the team is Eli Brooks. And you can put Eli Brooks at the point, and he's going to do just fine. And Austin Davis is certainly a capable offensive player, but what he is not is a defender. And so, and what Dickinson has proved to be is a really good defender. And he's not a true rim protector, but he had 3 blocks in this game, and he has some blocks on the season. And positionally, he does things really well. There was that blitz that Brian pointed out of Marcus Carr at the beginning of the second half in the Minnesota game, and yet he blitzed Carr, took Carr out of his shot, and then managed to come back and cover up. He's a good defender, and what Austin is not a good defender. Even as much as we love him, as much as he's a good offensive player, that, you know, and so I'm not so sure that Dickinson isn't the sort of key and on this team, whether he's scoring or not scoring. Because if he's not scoring, they're probably doubling him, and the court is opened up. And
he had a lot of gravity, right?
You know, yes.
Even if he only scored 2 points in the first half, the Badgers were focusing so much defensive effort onto him that opened things up for other guys on the court. And, mm-hmm. you know, I particularly think about that circle cut from Livers to get Michigan's first points, where they have Reavers chasing him around a couple screens, and then they run some action on the backside, and those two guys never even look at Livers. Like, there's no possible way that they're going to switch, because the other two guys they're trying to guard are Franz Wagner, who has like a 136 O rating in Big Ten play, and Hunter Dickinson. So, you know, who's the most indispensable is, I guess, a good question to be able to talk about, because everybody on this team, like, there's no clear answer for, like, that guy's not it. Right. Like, you could argue for Franz. You could argue for Livers. You could even argue for Shaun D. Brown, just because he's a complete lunatic on the defensive end. And then Eli is the guy who did a really, really good job on Trice for most of this game. Now, I talked about Shaun D. at the end of the first half, but Trice's defensive assignment was mostly Brooks. And Michigan got torched from 2-point at the rim in last year's game because Brooks missed that game. And Michigan gets him back, and Wisconsin can't get to the rim basically at all. So literally everybody on this team could be the most indispensable player on the team. And that's how you get to be 11-0.
Yeah. And that's really a really good point. I mean, I'm looking at Franz's numbers, and I'm trying to come up with somebody who has numbers like this. I mean, cause he, you know, he's scoring, he's rebounding, he's assisting. You know, he has 11 turnovers on the season, and I think five or six of those were in the Oakland game. So other than that, I think he's got maybe 4 turnovers in the Big Ten and 28 assists, which is just unbelievable. Even for a point guard, a talented point guard, that would be unbelievable. And he's blocking shots. I think he's blocked 2 shots a game in the Big Ten. He's got a steal and a half. And I was trying to think, who has stats like that? And the only one I could think of was, I think his name was Andre Kirilenko. Remember Kirilenko?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the only guy I can think of in the history of basketball who sort of fills the stat box in a similar way. You know,
Kevin Garnett.
Pardon me?
Kevin Garnett, maybe.
Maybe Garnett, but Garnett wasn't that sort of an assist and he turned it over more. So it's quite remarkable. He's a first-round pick right now. Anybody who thinks otherwise is wrong, and if the NBA thinks otherwise, they're blowing it, because last year he was not.
You don't have to tell them.
Pardon me?
You don't have to let them know that.
Yeah, well, he is. I mean, he's playing at such a high level without having to dominate the ball. It's what we're seeing out of Franz is truly remarkable.
Yeah, he's an elite defender. He is.
And he's an elite defender, too.
He's an elite defender. He's a volume rebounder.
Yeah.
I mean, he is shown to be more adept at putting it on the floor this season. I don't think the praise that we are seeing from now that his offensive, he sort of found his offensive, he's found a little bit of a rhythm.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to score 20 for you to feel like he has a fantastic game. He can't be in single digits. I mean, he has to be a factor offensively, which he is much more now. And it's why the praise, I mean, what did Dan Dockage say? He's the best, you know, NBA prospect in the Big Ten. And I think that's warranted. I think maybe the bigger question is Hunter Dickinson. I actually came across in the chat. Is Hunter Dickinson the one and done? I just don't think so. You know, I talked to Tim about it. He's talked to a lot of NBA scouts about it. And just that, you know, as good as he has been, and he has been outstanding, you know, his style is not in line with the way that they play typically in NBA. That doesn't mean that he won't be an NBA first round draft pick or an NBA player at some point. But Luka Garza came back. I mean, Luka Garza came back to college. He is, you know, he is obviously an outstanding, scoring big man and a guy who can actually step out and hit a three or two. And he still came back to college. I think Hunter's at least a 2-year guy. At least, Tim said, you know, he thinks there's a good chance there might be a 3-year guy, but at least a 2-year guy for Hunter Dickinson. I wonder what you guys think before we get to break.
Yeah, I mean, Sam Vecenie of The Athletic just put him on his board, and he's a second-round pick. And I feel like, you know, if Hunter Dickinson sees that and that's a consistent thing, that he'll come back.
Yeah.
And the other thing about Garza is a really bad defender, and I think Dickinson has more terrible upside there. But switch on the perimeter NBA upside seems like a little bit of a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, to call Garza a really bad defender is probably understating it. But he can play offense.
which is one of the reasons why, as we look ahead to this game, we got to get to a break, look ahead to the Minnesota game. How did Leon Robbins not go off against Iowa? Like you said, you talk about Luka Garza, you know, hell, Craig should be able to hit 30 against Luka Garza, right?
I did once.
All right, we got to get to a break. We'll be back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider Board MGO Blog Roundtable with Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket. We are back folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Just real quick before we switch gears over to football, guys, this rematch with Minnesota, what do you guys think about that? Michigan on the road. I mean, they've passed one road test in Maryland, which we've seen Maryland show some flashes this season. Michigan destroyed Minnesota. Hunter Dickinson thoroughly outplayed, dominated Liam Robbins. Marcus Carr had an off game, but it's not like they left that game. I mean, both those guys struggled against Iowa, who you guys just so aptly pointed out played no defense. So I'm not with the way Michigan plays defense. I guess I really feel like, you know, Michigan is at least that part of the performance they can replicate the way that how disruptive they were defensively to a couple of guys, a duo that's really struggling offensively right now.
Yeah. So Carr kind of had those two threes at the end of the first half where Michigan isn't able to get their screen coverages right. And then the second half, Dickinson starts blitzing because he has zero fouls. So that's a luxury that you have when you're big is able to stay that much out of foul trouble. So if Dickinson gets a couple fouls, if Robbins kind of plays a better game, which I expect him to, just because, you know, he's coming from the MVC, he hasn't seen a guy like that before, he'll adapt, and I think he'll play better. So if he's able to get a foul or two on Dickinson, and then, you know, Michigan isn't able to execute their second half strategy again because of that, then I think you could see Michigan. But, I mean, if it's not Carr and it's not Robbins, that supporting cast is really struggling. So unless Kalischer kind of gets off the schneid here and gets back to being a freshman shooting 41% from three instead of 26 or whatever, like, you know, Booth Gatch is not going to beat you.
Yeah, that seems about right to me. I mean, I think if we're not in foul trouble, if they can keep Dickinson and Smith on the court, Michigan is in good shape in this game. But you always worry about a couple of cheap fouls early, and the next thing you know, the game gets beyond you somehow. But we'll see. Michigan hasn't really seen that so far in the Big Ten. So,
I mean, who do you want after they played each other and then they had a week? Do you want Richard Pitino drawing up what the answer is going to be, or do you want Juwan Howard drawing up what your answer is going to be?
Yeah, that's a point.
Yeah, great. All right, let's switch gears. Get over to football. Big news yesterday. Let's get your reaction. Mike Hart, Michigan's new running backs coach. What do you think of the move?
Well, I think you should do all the press conferences. Be good. Good stuff. I mean, all the Indiana fans that I follow on Twitter were despondent at this news, which is a good sign. And I think he's going to be able to recruit really well. How meaningful it's going to be to have him as a running backs coach, I don't know. I mean, running backs coaches are usually reputed to be like guys who kind of roll out the ball and go recruit. And if anyone can defy that, it's probably Mike Hart. But, you know, the running back room already looks pretty good under Jay Harbaugh's tutelage. So I don't expect like a huge upgrade on field play. He'll help in recruiting. And
yeah, I think it's a net gain as a recruiter. You go from McDaniels to Mike Hart. I think that you have seriously increased or enhanced the recruiting prowess of your offensive staff. Now it'll be interesting to see what happens on the defensive side of the ball, if they can have similar upgrades as far as recruiting is concerned on that side of the ball. Time will tell, but definitely in an off season where, I mean, even I struggle to find any happiness in the Michigan fan base. This seemed to be something different, you know, a glass half full, at least for a second, for a moment, with fans excited about Mike Hart's return. What do you think of it, Craig?
I think it's great. I think the fan base loves it, and anything that, you know, makes the fan base, including me, feel happy right now is a good thing. It seems that he's been a successful recruiter, you know, everywhere he's been, even at Eastern. I think Brian or Seth was pointing out off air, he had some success there. And plus, I like him. I like the fact that, you know, he and D'Antonio hated each other. And anyone who despises Mark D'Antonio or whatever his name is fine with me.
Disrespect.
So I like that. And what I really like about two things I like most about Mike Hart was, I don't think any running back ever at Michigan played harder than Mike Hart, who would never ever give up on a play. And two, he, except for the first game of his career and the last game of his career, I don't think he ever fumbled. And he was a great pass blocker. Maybe the best, and even though he was a short guy, one of the best in Michigan history, only A-Train came close. And so maybe these things can translate to some extent to the running backs we have, and maybe we'll see some improvement there. So, you know, I'm super happy with Mike Hart coming. And I think I've had a bunch of emails. Everyone was excited about Mike Hart being a part of the coaching staff. So I think it's great.
Yeah, from a fan perspective, you know, we love it because we're all Michigan fans, and Mike Hart, mm-hmm. you know, made us feel good. And the optics, that helps too. I think where it helps most are in places that we don't normally see, like analysts and people breaking down film aren't ever going to see how high school coaches see Michigan, how the car guys see Michigan. And I know we kind of dismiss that all the time, like, you know, how the old players just need to shut up and fall in line, but they don't. And when they're talking, and they were talking long before the program had, you know, this horrible 2020 season and went into the death spiral with Ohio State, like, those guys have been talking, and this gives them some credibility in an area where they were severely lacking. And like Sam says, it helps them recruiting. I don't think that's just with the players. I think that this gives them a lot of credibility with some high school coaches who they've lost credibility with over the last few years, and gives them some credibility with people in the around the program who you really need, who've not been really pulling their weight lately because they don't believe in the program.
All right, so switching to the other side of the ball, lot of smoke around Mike McDonald, linebackers coach for the Baltimore Ravens. Certainly a name that I've heard for a while. It was one that I had honestly, once we got into the new year, I'd kind of written off. You know, didn't think that it was necessarily going to go that route. And then, so when the name came out, it's like, okay, well, immediately knew that was legit because I'd heard it before. So I expect that to go down. I expect it to be Mike McDonald, a guy who basically cut his teeth as a coach, as an on-field coach in the pros with the Baltimore Ravens. He was previously a GA with Georgia. I believe he's 33. It originally had questions about whether this would be a co-DC
type of role. And while I have not been told definitively that it won't be, I've heard nothing to nothing so far has made me think that that's the route that they're going to go. So that being the case, I'm curious what you guys think of Mike McDonald based on what you what you've been able to uncover so far. I understand there's a lot we don't know, but based on what you do know, what do you think of Mike McDonald as the possible potential defensive coordinator for Michigan?
Well, I mean, there's nothing really to dig up, right? Because he's been a position coach in the NFL for a few years, and that's his whole track record. So he's never recruited. We have no evidence of what he would do if put in a position of power because he's never had one. It might be the smartest thing to do because the last time you got a defensive coordinator, it was Don Brown, who had the best resume in the country. So how do you top the best resume in the country? You don't. You go with someone with no resume. And then, well, I can't criticize anything here because there's nothing going on. I mean, the one thing I will say, despite the fact that he's been in the NFL the whole time, you know, he's on a team with Lamar Jackson. So it's not like he's unfamiliar with the idea of what you need to do to stop a mobile quarterback because he's trying to do it every day in practice. So, you know, I feel like this is a shot in the dark. And I think it's something, it's a hire you make when you're not really attractive to other college DCs because there's a lot of uncertainty in the program and a strong chance that you don't get to year two. So this guy is an up and comer who wants to take a swing at it. That's fine. I have no capability to tell you whether it's a good idea or a bad idea.
Seth? Yeah, I think it'd be a brilliant move for a program who's not Michigan and has, like, you know, you're going to be in the spotlight and you've got 1 year to perform. Obviously, Michigan's in their own situation, but, you know, he seems to be a guy who is kind of rising really fast through the coaching ranks. So he was he didn't even play football, but he was, like, around the Georgia program when he was in school there. After after college, he coached for, like, a year in Athens, I think, in Athens, Georgia, and then very quickly gets picked up by the Georgia staff as a GA, and then very quickly goes to the Ravens, where he's very quickly promoted to an actual position coach. Usually it takes a lot longer to get where he's gotten. And if John Harbaugh is telling his brother, hey, here's your guy, this guy's an up-and-comer, I think that if we're talking about Indiana, it's probably a better hire than if you're talking about Michigan in this current situation. What bothers me is that you need to have somebody on staff now. Like, there's recruits making decisions, and you're going to win by the players in the field, not who's coaching them. There's no way to out-scheme Ohio State. You've got to get some players who can run with Ohio State receivers and play with them. That's the only way to beat those guys. And they're missing an opportunity right now to get the players that they need to be able to play defense in any way. I don't care what scheme you're running.
I agree with most of that, but I did just see Tuff Borland try to run with Devonta Smith. So I feel like there is a way to out-scheme Ohio State on offense. Maybe it's a better bet than defense. But
yeah, I guess I don't know that there was any – I don't know that anyone in college football would have an answer for Alabama.
Well, the answer is not Tuff Borland on Devonta.
Well, I mean, you know, what they obviously made a choice. They were going to play those linebackers and try to hold up against the run. But if they go the other route, if they go small and try to play the matchup game with the receivers, then they're going to get bowled over by that big offensive line and Najee Harris. I'm not saying that Kerry Combs is, you know, a defensive dynamo, far from it. I just don't know what he didn't have any good choices there, I guess, is in my opinion.
I think at least we can take solace in the fact that if Najee Harris was going to bring joy to Michigan fans, he was in the right place.
Right. Yeah, it was a strange sort of pleasure rooting vicariously through Bama fans for Bama on the day. But anytime Ohio State experiences the kind of slaughter, the kind of despair that they're experiencing after that game, I'm feeling pretty good. Craig, what do you think of McDonald?
You know, I don't know. It's a blank slate. You know, two things appeal to me about it, maybe three. One is it can't get any worse. Two is that he's young. And three is I think John Harbaugh's a really smart guy. And I don't think John Harbaugh sticks a guy on the Michigan program unless he thinks he really believes that this guy will be an asset for the program. That's the biggest thing for me.
Are we sure that John and Jim are like cool? Because like,
yeah, I think they are. I think they are.
Like, it could be like, well, why don't you take this guy?
No, I think
you know, he just had a press conference sort of sidebar. It's like, I love my brother. I really love my brother. So yeah, he loves.
And so I think that, you know, there's a chance that this could really be a home run, and because Michigan isn't in a situation where they can take flyers at this point, unless the flyers really have some back merit to them that isn't generally known to the fans. And so my instincts are this is probably really a good hire, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see who they. I mean, the key to me is, as Brian so eloquently pointed out, is Mike McDonald's resume is lacking coordinator experience or college experience. So do the Martelli thing, you know, put some guys around him, even if it's not necessarily, with a title of co, but you can put guys around him that are have been in the college game a while and are well versed, that have, you know, recruited at a high level, guys that maybe have had coordinator experience.
I know a safeties coach who's available.
I do too.
I was gonna say they just tried that, and it was the worst hire in the history of college football.
I mean, that's a good point. I'm sure there's guys floating out there who can help them in that aspect, but I mean, it's just a tough hill to climb. Like, you're really just hoping that whoever they replace Justin Fields with at Ohio State is a big step down, and then you have a shot.
Yeah.
But I think it's a big ask if Ohio State's operating at this level to get your defense from whatever it was this year, 90th, up to a point where it's able to hang.
Yeah.
Their receivers are so good, man. Like, I don't even know if you need a good quarterback to do
you
it.
You need a good quarterback.
You need a fair quarterback, but like,
you know, Bowser, you know, when you walk through that door, you're still feeling like, all right, we got this.
Oh, sure. But like, they're going to keep that guy upright, and they're going to be able, you know, as long as he's got a couple assets, then he'll be fine. And Ohio State has access to plenty of quarterbacks. I mean, they can pick somebody up in the transfer portal if they don't have one.
Yeah, that'll be, I think that from the transfer portal standpoint for Michigan, too, I'm not convinced that they won't at least entertain the idea of a veteran quarterback, but it'd have to be a guy that you absolutely not a depth guy, a guy that you believe that can come in and start. Otherwise, I think it's, you know, you see who comes back between Joe and Cade. And I don't think there's any question with Cade, but obviously a question with Joe. And then you see how this young freshman, you know, enrolling early, how ready you can get him to really compete and possibly be the guy.
We really want another transfer quarterback in the Harbaugh era. Everyone else since then has just been.
I don't think it's about what you want. I think it's the situation that you're in. I'll go back to last year. I said at the time, as much as, you had the interesting thing for me about their quarterback dynamic. I don't know how we got on it, but you have a guy in Cade McNamara that has shown you he's a gamer. Absolute gamer. Have a guy in you know, Joe, who you look at and you're like, man, he looks so good in practice, hasn't really translated to games, and yet both guys are still inexperienced enough for you to say, guess what, if there's a guy that has played a lot of football, like when we were having this conversation about JT Daniels last year, I'm like, man, you can't pass on that. And I feel the same way again this year. If you got a guy that has a wealth of experience, and, you know, showed some real, you know, positives when he played. He isn't just leaving because he can't play. I think you got to look at that guy.
Well, if Joe leaves, don't they have to bring someone in the program? Because they have a freshman, they have Dan Villari, and they've got Cade. That's it.
That's crazy. But they had three quarterbacks last year, right? Like, if they lose Joe Milton, who his best chance to start at a major college football program next year is to stay in Ann Arbor. Because, I mean, he was playing pretty well
before he got hurt. And I think if you extrapolate his last few games performance to the fact that he was not healthy, like, yeah, he can compete here and he can start here. And I don't think that going to a new system with a new coach when you are still kind of a work in progress is going to be an immediate starting situation.
You're right. Hey, look, I don't dispute that. But you know, these decisions aren't always rational. I'm not saying.
Well, what I'm saying is you've had two, if you have two back to back irrational quarterback decisions that really hurt your team, you've really put yourself behind the eight ball. Yeah,
right. And I'm not saying, I don't mean to suggest that that's what's going to happen. Is it a possibility? Sure it is. Time to tell. Hey, I gotta get a couple hockey takes. Always gotta get a couple hockey takes before we come in. And Michigan came out of the gate like gangbusters, 9-0. And then the next night, it seemed like the game was won. And in the last few minutes, what happened, Ryan? Did they take their foot off the gas pedal?
I mean, pucks bounce. Like, I feel like anytime you look at a couple of goals late, you're like, all right, that's a breakdown here. That's a breakdown there. And there were breakdowns, but it's just, you know, it's a total goal series where it's 11-3 and you're out shooting them 2-1 both nights. And most of the time you're going to win both of those games going away. And I just, like, it sucks that that's the way the second game played out. But just the way they played, I think, deserve better. And the sequencing of those goals is crushing. But the level of play there, I think, was what we expected.
Mm-hmm. This is not a 500 team, and this is the first time I think that the puck really bounced away from them. They just had there's been reasons for everything, right? There's a reason for the Minnesota series. They were missing five guys. There's a reason for Notre Dame. That happens when you play Notre Dame, and when you play Michigan State and they get the first goal, then
the first shot,
right?
And then the
second shift,
six guys lying in the crease, and just like, all right, we'll try to score through this. And Michigan does, and then they're still lying in the crease because it's a tie. They're like, ooh, we could tie this one. And you get the go-ahead goal, and it's just, you know, you get a couple of good shots from them that are well-placed, and it's a bummer, man. But you still outshoot them 2-1 both nights, and the domination on Friday was just, I mean, that was a 4-1 game until late when, you know, they kind of relaxed because they were up 9-0.
Yeah, I asked you guys last week, you know, sort of referencing a point that Mel made. He said we need to be grittier. He said we're a pretty team. We need to be more gritty. And I think it was Seth said, no, they're pretty. This is going to be pretty. But you know, in talking about how heavily penalized they are, do you think that just evens out? Maybe we discussed this a little bit before, but do you think that just evens out? Do you think that if it was a refereeing issue, that just goes away in the second half of the season? How do you, or is a lot of this on Michigan? What do you think of that real quick?
Well, so they get a 5-minute major in the second game that I know the way that they're calling these games these days, that's a risk for a 5-minute major. But to me, that's a Michigan State player putting his own head in the strike zone, and you're making it impingent on players to protect other players who aren't doing the right thing that they should be doing in hockey. And you got to keep your hit. You got to keep your head up. And that's because there's no malicious intent on that hit, but it's still a 5-minute major. And, you know, given what we've seen not called 5-minute majors for hits on Michigan players, I have a hard time countenancing that call. But I mean, Michigan got a ton of power plays. That was the really disappointing thing about the second game, is that they had four or five power plays and they really didn't get a great scoring chance on maybe all but one. So they have a lot of possession, but they weren't able to really break them down. And that's kind of disturbing, because that's something that they've been excellent at so far on their limited opportunity.
Gotcha. Well, we're going to have to call it a wrap there, guys. As always, great, great show. Be sure to check the fellas out over on mgoblog.com and check them out back here next week for the MGO Blog Roundtable.
who's got it better than us?